You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome in to another edition on the T with Anita Marks, John Mascari, and Christina Thompson. John, of course, is the head pro at Alpine Country Club, and Christina is the owner extraordinaire of the wonderful and fabulous Golf for Her.
Extraordinaire.
That's right. So how are you guys doing? We record this podcast on Tuesday night. It posts sometime around Wednesday morning, Wednesday afternoon. How are you guys doing this evening?
Good, good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Well, no, thank you for any chance I have to talk golf. I'm all about it.
I'm doing well, Anita. Thank you for asking. I'm doing fine.
I know. I like you.
You're such a jerk, John Mascari. We all played Alpine Country Club on Monday. John, thanks for having us. Your track is...
Yeah.
Spectacular.
Gorgeous.
I will say, I think it was probably maybe like the 10th or 12th time I've played Alpine Country Club. And so it's very interesting being somebody who's had that experience caddying for Christina and her husband, Mark. Did I not do a great job with you? Did I not tell you where to hit the ball? Like, John,
you're right.
I think I missed my calling. I think I just like calling.
Hey, we're always on the lookout for new caddies that are exceptional. So
I think I should have been. Christina, I'm tongue in cheek. I'm kind of joking, but I'm kind of not. Like, did I not steer you and Mark in the right direction every hole?
Let me tell you something. Alpine, it might be one of my favorite courses that I've played recently. I mean, this course is sexy. Like, it is gorgeous. The conditions were incredible, but you definitely need to play that course with a caddy or someone who knows where the shots are, because those greens were tricked up. A lot of false fronts. You did a great job on fooling me many times. I lost a few balls rolling down, but I didn't lose any balls. So I was excited about that, but the trees are beautiful. I mean, the whole scene there was just gorgeous. You guys do a fantastic job up there. But Anita, definitely was helpful having you tell me where to hit that ball on some of those shots, because we had no idea. No idea.
John, can we just marinate in the fact that she called your golf course sexy?
I don't know how to take this, really. I'm kind of
Have you ever had anyone describe a golf course to you as sexy?
I have never had anyone say that before. So I'm kind of sitting back in my chair saying, how is that possible? But it kind of sounds cool, but I'm not going to repeat it to someone.
Well, let me tell you those.
Thank you. It was our pleasure to have you all. It was a super hot day, so... I'm glad everyone was out there safe and enjoyed the golf course. Steve Finnemore and his crew do a great job each and every day having it tournament ready. And it was fun to see you all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, John. All right, guys, let's jump right into the Memorial Tournament, right? Like, one of the biggest tournaments since, as I call it, the pandemic pause has now the players, of course, back. I want to say, was this the fifth or sixth tournament that they played since they revamped up the tour? And John Rahm, the winner, 9 under. Behind him, Ryan Palmer at 6 under. Jason Day was at 4. Norlander was at 3. Finau was at -2 after a great 2 days. First 2 days, shot 66 and a 69. Was crushing, and the three of us were all big Tony Finau fans. Anybody who listens to our podcast for the third straight year, our show for the third straight year, knows that. You know, a lot of talk, a lot of hype about Tiger Woods coming into this tournament. He finished +6. But let's talk about John Rahm for a second. And listen, I got to eat crow. I did not think that Jon Rahm, look at you. It's a shame.
I'm chomping. I can't wait to talk. So go ahead.
I know. So here's Jon Rahm had only played this course in the Memorial once, and he did not make the cut. And since the players started playing again, his game has not been on point. It's no disrespect to Jon Rahm. I'm not saying he's a horrible golfer. He just did not show to me that he was ready to play the Memorial. But boy, was I wrong. And you could have, I told people, not going to make the cut at plus 300. Obviously, I was way wrong. Opposite like spectrum, unlike any other wrong, to not make the cut, let alone to win the tournament. Unbelievable. And now he's number one in the world. He leapfrogs over Rory. So
that's John, crazy.
So John, I'm gonna give you your stage. I just ate crow.
Yes, I would love this stage, actually, because this is why we work so well. We kind of are opposites, you and I, and we feed off that. And I, for one, said Jon Rahm was going to win the tournament this week, and what do you know? He wins. This guy looked like he was playing a different golf course than everyone else. He came into the tournament number two in the world. He wasn't getting any respect from the tour. They didn't put him in any of the preferred pairings. He just shut everybody up, played fantastic golf, and I'm so happy that he won. Obviously, from what I've heard, he lost some family members that were close to him to COVID, so he had a little bit of an emotional spark. But I think he had a chip on his shoulder going into this tournament. So good on him. Fantastic, fantastic golf by Jon Rahm on a golf course that it felt like it was the U.S. Open. The rough was overgrown, numbers were through the roof, and he looked like he was a man among boys. So, yeah, I got this one right this time.
And just to, because I just found out that he had lost family members to COVID-19 just a few minutes ago prior to us recording this podcast. And Christina did some research. He lost his great-grandmother, and he lost his mother's aunt to COVID-19, and apparently he was pretty emotional after the tournament, of course winning and then becoming the number one player in the world, and he was very emotional about it. So our hearts and our prayers go out to his family. I think at this stage in the game, I mean, we've all been dealing with COVID-19 since March, that we all either know somebody or know somebody who knows somebody who's lost a family member to COVID-19. And it's so sad, and it's not easy. So I guess my point is I can't imagine him playing with that type of heavy heart after losing two family members. So God bless.
Yeah, no, it's a tough one. That's a tough one, but it just goes to show you the mental strength that these players have, because many of the players over the years have all experienced some trauma around tournament time. So it just really goes to show that they're able to put that aside. But you saw him in his interview, and he breaks down in tears. So I just
he's an emotional guy, both
for sure
on and off the course. And for me, as someone, as a golfer, I love to play with an emotional guy like that, a guy that's into it. He, like I said, he's fiery. And those are the kind of players that when the chips are down, you want them on your side. So
In addition to all this, I mean, he had that penalty. He got assessed a 2-stroke penalty from his ball.
Oh, his little penalty problem.
Yeah, so I mean, adding that into the mix on it all, I mean,
I'm kind of on the fence with the penalty, by the way.
Yeah, let me hear about
that. Yeah, okay, but also, John, if you can, I'm sure there's people listening to the podcast that maybe they didn't see it or they didn't watch the tournament. Kind of explain what happened, please.
Okay, so I'll walk you guys through it. On 16, he's got a chip shot from just off the green. And the rough, as we know, is pretty thick there. And he's looking at his shot. And then part of his routine is he's kind of tapping down the grass and putting the club down as he's about to hit it. And hits the shot and chips it in. Right? So now his lead is 4 with 2 holes to go. Shot of the tournament, shot of his career, possibly to this point, at the Memorial, pretty much seals the win. Anyway, CBS starts to look at this, and they get the high-definition zoom in on his ball. And as they're slowing it down, you can see the ball kind of oscillate a little bit in the video as he's tapping the grass down before he hits the shot. So the commentators, which was Nick Faldo and I believe Ian Baker Finch, were talking about whether the ball moved, did it return back to its original place? Long story short, the rules officials got together, and this was as he was continuing to play, took a look at the video, deemed that the ball did move, and that's rule 9-4, so ball at rest by the moved by the player. And since he didn't put it back, it's a two-stroke penalty. So he was assessed that after the round. Now, it might have been a little different if he had a one-shot lead going in, and they probably would have told him on the 18th tee, because it's going to affect the way he plays the hole. But his lead was so much that they felt it really didn't impact him, so they waited till after the round. This is where you have to get into a little bit of a tricky situation
but you know,
here with video.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, I mean, that could have went any way. I mean, that could have went in the in a bad way. I mean, you saw the video. I mean, as soon as he put his club down on that grass, the ball just kind of like tilted, but then it looks like it went back into position. So it's like, it's one of these rules where, I mean, it's sitting on grass, which is an unstable playing area. So, you know, you can, like, the wind could blow and it could move it.
Well,
so.
Now listen, this was moved, you know, moved by him. So there was no outside agency that moved the ball.
True,
He caused this ball to move by putting his club there. The question I have is, did he see that ball move? Okay.
He had to.
I don't think he saw that ball move.
Don't you think he had to? I mean, it wasn't like it. I think he saw it. I mean, he could have been looking in the distance. He could have been obviously looking at
it. He could have been looking at the hole. He could have been looking at the spot where the ball landed. And this is where the video complicates things because it's if the committee feels or the rules committee feel that he couldn't have, that couldn't be seen with the naked eye, and the player didn't know that that happened, then he shouldn't be penalized for it. You know, the fact that you had to go to a super zoom in, super slow motion to see this, and listen, I would suggest everyone check it out online. It wasn't like the ball rolled a foot. I mean, this ball was like, you know, it moved like.
Like, whoop,
it
whoop.
Tilted a tiny
bit.
You used to whoop, whoop.
I did a whoop, whoop. So.
Are you sure we didn't?
It almost looks like it came back into position.
Are you sure they didn't have like another call in? Like somebody called in to CBS, like reporting him? Like
I don't know. I could, for all you know, it definitely could have been. Or someone in the company said, "Hey, let's take a look at that. You have that on. Can we zoom in on that?" And sure enough, I mean, that's my point. Like if an official were there, and there's officials with each group, the official didn't see it happen. The guy hitting the shot didn't see it happen. But then you have to go to this super zoomed-in replay of it to make that. But listen, that's the bottom line. He accepted
He still won. Yeah. But here's – did you guys hear that the dude who was playing him in DFS lost $150,000 because of that two-shot penalty? Could you imagine you're playing John Rahm in DFS and because of that two-shot penalty, you lose $150,000? How would you feel? How would you feel then, John? Because obviously you're defending him right now, but can you imagine you lose 100? You'd be really pissed off, right?
Oh my god! $150,000. Then again, I mean, he's playing for $150,000 in a DFS golf league. I mean, come on, we gotta have a deeper talk with this young man or lady.
Christina, could you imagine losing 150? You know how many shoes that is, Christina? Did we lose Christina? I think we did.
No, she's here.
There she is. Christina, could you imagine losing $150,000?
No, I could not. I can't. I can't function in that kind of environment.
She was so shocked by that. She had to get back online.
Yes. No, it's just that's, I don't understand. I don't roll with those people.
let's talk about DeChambeau for a second. You know, a lot of people were really high on DeChambeau. He had taken last week off. Coming into this week, he's been playing the best golf out of any golfer heading into this tournament. Man, he melted down.
Meltdown.
Yeah, and I think were you texting me in real time, Christina, during that meltdown?
I was. I just got home. I turned on Memorial. I'm like, all right, I got to see what's going on. I want to follow up, check in. And it just, I feel slightly responsible because it happened the moment I turned on.
It was all your fault.
I think I sent him bad juju or something.
So John,
my sofa, but like, I just watched it and I'm going, is this real?
It was crazy. John, explain what he was upset about in regard to how close his ball was to the fence.
Okay, yeah. So he hits the ball next to this wrought iron fence at the memorial, and the fence is used to define out of bounds. So in the local rules, it shows that the interior portion of the fence is the out of bounds line. And for a ball to be out of bounds, the whole ball must be out of bounds. However, this fence kind of crept in a little bit in between the posts and had like smaller posts in it. And the ball was not, if you kind of look at those smaller posts, it would not have been out of bounds. However, they felt it was the big posts that are the main out of bounds line, and then the whole ball was out of bounds. So he was arguing against that. He wanted another official to come back in and give him a second opinion, and that official pretty much said the same thing, dude. And before you know it, he's making a 10 on the hole, which is the highest score he's ever made on tour, on his way to a 76. But I what I found funny in that whole situation, and listen, you hate to see it happen to someone, but after he puts out, he's kind of counting and he's pointing down the fairway. It's like one, okay, two over there. Like, you know, like
average
weekend golf, or three, four, five ons. Okay.
We all do that.
But which the craziest part of this is, as I'm watching this, you know, he took that first shot and it landed, you know, out of bounds. And then he took the exact same club expecting a completely different result, and he hit the exact same shot, like to 3 inches from each other from the previous ball. And then he went and did a third shot with the exact same club. I was like, it was like the scene out of like Tin Cup. I mean, it was just like, it's just nuts. It was crazy. I'm like, I got up off the sofa and I was like, is he really doing this? Like, this is madness that I would do.
Like, all right, so let me ask you guys this. Is this now the second time he's kind of, you know, air quotes, got into it with someone on the golf course? Remember, he kind of voiced his displeasure with the cameraman a few weeks ago. And I mean, do you think he's shown his true colors here, or is just this two instances where he didn't like the outcome?
Well, listen, I think he even said, you know, he muttered stuff, like, I think after the ruling, like, you know, they're giving me another garbage ruling, you know, so I think he's got a little bit of a chip, like, he's expecting more of himself because he's working so hard at all of these things, but maybe he's just, you know, can't get out of his own way. He is a little bit of that mad scientist, like, a little crazy.
At the end of the day, though, I don't think it's a good look for him. I've spoken to a number of people who watched the tournament or saw that clip. Obviously, it was all over SportsCenter, and it's just not a good look for him. You know, I mean, he looks like a spoiled little arrogant child.
I think it's an immaturity. I think it comes off as a little bit of immaturity. And I think it's something he needs to work on. And you know, even when he had that first interaction with the cameraman, I mean, his comment was, you know, he doesn't want to look bad. So don't put your camera on me while I'm having a bad moment, because I don't want to look bad. Well, get yourself in check, dude. Like, you know, you are in control of those moments. You know, you're on television. So get yourself in check. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting season.
That's if you want to be on the big stage, Bryson, that's when the cameras are on and the lights are the brightest.
Yeah, so. And John, what was up with his caddy blocking the shot of the cameraman? What was that about? Like,
immaturity, as Christina
exactly.
said.
Exactly.
If you want to run with the big dogs, come on, man. That's kind of bush league, if you ask me.
It's ridiculous. We've kind of buried the lead here, and that is Tiger Woods. He's plus six. Shot 71 on Thursday, 76 on Friday, 71 on Saturday, 76 on Sunday, and finish at plus six. John, let's start with you. Like, what did you see from Tiger? Obviously, you know, we know his putter was not working. He just not feel comfortable with the putter. You know, but what was your analysis after seeing him play for 4 days?
You know, listen. Tough conditions to have your first week back on tour playing at Muirfield. And he was rusty. I mean, a 5-month layoff for Tiger at that age is going to be rusty. He made the weekend on the number. He limped around and fought it up here and there. I think his back was still bothering him. I don't think he was 100%. But, you know, was it good to get out there and just get the kind of competitive juices flowing again for himself? He probably thought so. But, you know, we spoke about it last week where I really didn't expect much from him at the Memorial. And, you know, it's just going to be a kind of a slower crawl back maybe to true form for Tiger. But, listen, he had glimmers of greatness and then glimmers of what? But
let me ask you guys. I was watching his one of his post-round interviews. Did he look thin, like thinner than normal? I don't know. I was looking at him going, he looks like he's like slimmed up a little bit.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did look thinner than normal. But, you know, during this pandemic, you know, I think there's no middle ground. Like, I've gained 10 pounds, but I've gained 10 pounds because I'm not spinning. You know, gyms aren't open. I can't do the spin classes like I used to. So,
oh yeah,
you know,
well, I've gained 10 pounds because I'm eating a pint of ice cream at nighttime. So I have no excuse.
So, but you know, but there's
people.
Anything
about
but
his
there's,
schedule.
But there's people who, you know, like, chances are he probably, like, Patrick Mahomes, quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. Apparently he does Peloton. Oh. And his Peloton name is 2 PM. And so apparently he does Peloton. Yeah. I don't know what 2 PM is about, but anyway, that's his Peloton name. So, you know, I don't have a bike here in my house. I'm not, you know what I mean? So, like,
How can you afford one of those bikes?
Well, I think you're seeing two kinds of people in regard to this pandemic, right? I think you're seeing people that are attacking this pandemic and saying, you know what? I'm going to exercise. I've got time now. I'm going to eat right. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to lose weight. And you've got other people who are like, oh man, I can't get to the gym. I can't do, I'm out of my jam. I'm out of my vibe. I'm out of my groove. And they're gaining weight. So, you know, maybe he's, you know, maybe he's on the better side of it all. You know, maybe he's
apparently
one of the people who,
I'm sorry. I can't picture Tiger Woods like sitting on a couch with a bag of Cool Ranch Doritos and just watching, binge watching Netflix.
I can.
That'd be awesome. I think that would be awesome.
You know, like the mesh dude, shorts and like a backwards hat.
The dude's dating some chick who manages one of his restaurants. Like, I can.
You got takeout every night.
Sure, I can. But
No way.
Anyway, yes, I think.
Basement? You got like the whole sick punting setup and everything?
I think you're right. I think he did look thinner than normal. But, So with that being said, guys, you know, I know that there's some hefty expectations, especially, you know, when the Masters rolls around in November. Well, first things first, you know, we're not going to see him until the PGA Championship, right, guys? Right? Like, that's going to be
– I mean, FedEx. He could play at the FedEx. I don't think he's going to play, but don't rule that out yet. But, yes.
That's true.
Let's rewind. Based on this performance at the Memorial, John, if you were him, would you play the FedEx?
No.
No, why?
I would just focus on the PGA. That's it. Play, you know, play on his own, get healthy, get worked on, you know, dial in, feel good about your swing, and then let's go.
Interesting.
You don't think there's something to be said for being in those tournaments and playing with these guys?
I just don't think – I mean, he's got a bad taste in his mouth right now coming from the Memorial. So I just think he needs to be on his own, get his game going, and then go right to the tournament. What happens if he plays in the FedEx and plays bad again? And then now he's going into the, you know, the PGA on a kind of a downturn. So
are you
slow now. He's going to work his way back up, and we'll see what happens.
John, are you putting any money on Tiger next time he tees it up?
No.
Mm. We know Christina is. She's all about him.
I am. I picked him to make the cut, and you two said no way. So I think I get a bottle of wine.
Hey, let's talk about Jack Nicklaus for a second. Obviously, the Memorial is his tournament, so he was there. Two things came out in regard to Jack and him talking to the media.
One is, at the age of 80, him and his wife tested positive for COVID-19 back in March and survived on both him and his wife. I mean, it's really, really unbelievable. God bless.
Crazy. How did we not know this?
You know, he kept it under wraps. HIPAA laws, whatever. Like, whatever. I mean, just God bless that they're both okay, because, you know, this virus is not very kind to people that are over the age of 50. And really, more importantly, and this is a conversation, John, I'd love to hear you talk about. And Christina, I don't know, maybe you've had this discussion with a number of the LPGA players that you work with, but Jack came out and said the USGA can't keep burying their head in regard to equipment and how long drives are in regard to golf balls and whatnot. So, John, let's start with you. I mean, is Jack correct in any regard in regard to how the distance is just you can't build golf courses any longer than they are right now? You know, do you feel that Jack has a point here in regards to the equipment and the golf balls that are being used?
Yeah, I think before you really dive into this question, you need to know that this has been something he's been speaking about for 30 years, about dialing back the golf ball. And you're talking to a person like Jack, who was the longest on tour when he was in his prime. So he was the young kid coming up and pounding it by everyone else. So let's think about that. Here's Jack, who builds a ton of golf courses. He understands that you can't build them any longer, number one. Number two, you're taking the classic golf courses that the game was founded on in the United States and pretty much throwing them out the window as pigeon putts, okay? Mm-hmm. Think about Marion in Philadelphia, where it's like just over 7,000 yards from the U.S. Open. You can't create – there's no land to make these courses bigger. So what can we do? We can change the equipment. We can change the ball, the golf clubs. The ball seems like it's the easiest one to change, okay? The ball will not travel as far. It will put more of a premium on the golfer's ability to shape the shot, to play a certain type of shot into a hole. All good, right? My question then is, okay, let's say the driver now only will go 250. Okay, we have to understand that at some point, someone's going to come along and hit the new ball 290. And then someone 5 years from then is going to figure out how to hit the ball 310. I mean, look at all the other sports. I mean, baseball. That's for that reason, right? In hockey, when the scoring in the league went down, they made the goalie pads smaller so they could score more. Okay? Listen, everyone loves to see the long ball. Everyone loves to see guys shooting 20 under par. But at some point, you have to say that, hey, we're reaching a maximum point here where we have to say something about how far this golf ball travels and what it's doing to the characteristics of being a professional golfer and being able to hit all these different shots versus just pound it over all these trees and not play the
ball. Right. I mean, they're defeating the – I mean, listen, these courses are made for a reason, and the traps and course architectures design these courses – for a reason, right? So you're putting those trouble shots and those tricky places, you know, the traps in the right places. But do you think that it's going to impact players wanting to play if you start changing the equipment? I mean, I don't know. I look at that. I've had this conversation with a few people in the past, and, you know, listen, we can't really compare what happens on the LPGA with the PGA as it comes to equipment. But I don't know. I think it changes the game if you start changing the equipment. And I mean, I hope we don't see too much of a change.
Definitely changes.
You know, I just think it's going to change, you know?
Of course it is, but that's the point.
But
they want to change the game.
It changes.
That's the point. These guys will figure, they'll get used to it. Like, nothing else. Like,
they want to change
they'll figure it out. But that's the whole point. They want to change
but
the game.
Do we? Yeah.
When DeChambeau says that he's going to play the 13th hole at Augusta by hitting it down the 14th hole, that's not how you're supposed to play the hole. But he can hit it 420 in over every tree that's down there and come in on a different angle. Now, some would say that's his God-given ability to do that.
Right.
There's no roadmap to how you're supposed to play the hole.
Right.
But at some point, to your point, the hazard.
I just think guys like that are going to – that will ruin the game.
That's what Jack thinks. That's exactly what Nicholas thinks. It will ruin the game.
Yeah.
Interesting. Again, Anita Marks, John Mascari, Christina Thompson, you're listening to On the Tee. We're breaking down, actually recapping the memorial. And guys, let's preview the 3M Open happening at the TPC in Twin Cities. First and foremost, Grayson Murray now has tested positive for COVID-19. So he is not going to travel and play. Also, Tommy Fleetwood, I know he's a big, we're all big fans of his. He's traveled to the United States. I guess he's done the quarantine thing. Now, Christina or John, you say he's staying in the Hamptons right now? He's in the Hamptons?
Oh, he's really like roughing it by quarantining in the Hamptons.
Oh, poor guy.
The mimosas he's are probably very warm or something in the morning.
So how long has he been in the Hamptons?
I think he's been there 3 weeks, Christina. Have you heard that? I know he's been playing Sabonic. He's been playing National Golf Links. He's been bouncing around Friar's Head. You're really slumming it out there with those three places. But
I love have you guys – I've played Friar's Head a few times. Have you guys played Friar's Head before?
No. I've played the other two courses, Sabonic and National, not Friar's
Head. Yeah. Friar's Head is it's unbelievable. All right. So let's break down. I'll share with you – whether you want to listen to my picks or not, because obviously I was way off the mark with John Rahm last week. So here are the metrics heading into this tournament. Very similar to last week, right? And a lot of it right now is approach shots. So metrics heading into this tournament are strokes gained on approach, strokes gained tee to green, driving distance. Apparently this course is wide open. You could just absolutely grip it and rip it. Par four scoring, par five scoring, and best in birdies. Also, they'll be putting on bent grass, just FYI. So number one player teeing it up this week on bent grass is DJ Dustin Johnson. Brooks comes in fifth best player on bent grass. A guy that I have winning this, I love Paul Casey at 22-1. And I also like Lucas Glover, 33-1. Paul Casey ranked 37th in regard to putting on bent grass. I don't know why I can't get that out. Other guys that are good on bent grass, Tony Finau as well, who I have finishing in the top five. You can get Tony at 3-1. Finishing the top 10 is Eric Van, is it Rugen? Rogan?
Rugen. Rugen. R-O-O-Y-E-N.
Rugen. Eric Van Rugen, 4-1 to finish in the top 10. I got Doc Redman finishing in the top 20 at plus 275. I got Norlander finishing in the top 30 at plus 150. And John, I'd love for you to comment on this young man. I wrote about him in my article for ESPN on the Chalk site. Seagala? He's okay. He's a young amateur player, and he just turned pro this year, and He's from the LA area. No, nothing.
Wow.
Bueller.
Nothing on him. I'm sorry. I'm not going to try to fake it. I don't know much about him.
Theegela. That's how you pronounce his last. That's how you spell his last name. Anyway,
thanks for putting that in the pre-show notes. In it. I appreciate it.
For him to finish in the top 40 is plus 350. Listen, the thing about this tournament, there's really not a lot of big names, right?
Johnson. It's a weaker field.
But Dustin Johnson and Tony Finau are your two biggest names. And this kid is as good as Matthew Wolff. Like, this kid is supposed to be unbelievable. Not a star-studded field. You know what? Why not? At plus 350, why not root for this young kid?
Why not? I'd like to see Wolf do a little defend his title, to be honest. I'd like to see this kid have a run at that. I think it'd be awesome. I was looking at the leaderboard. Hunter Mahan, he's in it. Where has he been? I haven't seen him on a leaderboard in forever. So this is an interesting.
Are you guys really high on DJ this week?
Yeah, I think DJ. No.
Back-to-back 80s last week.
I think he's got this one. I think you're going to see top three finish for DJ.
I'm done. I'm done with him, and I'm done with Koepka, by the way, also.
Well, I'm done with Koepka. We've moved on.
I was high on him. I'm done with him.
Apparently his knee is acting up
again. I think his knee's bothering him, right?
Now, listen, I don't want to go out on another limb again, but I'm going to. Brooks Koepka doesn't make the cut, plus 250.
I agree with that one. I like
that action. I like that bet. That's a good
really?
One.
Oh, you like that action this week. How do you like those apples?
How do you like that action? I love that you talked about Paul Casey, by the way. You want to talk about someone who's, from a metrics perspective, is great for this golf course. Don't be surprised that he has a fantastic week. Well, I love Tony Finau, though.
I have Paul Casey winning. I have Paul Casey winning 22-1.
Great bet.
Interesting.
Thank you.
Great bet.
Bill Haas is out there.
Listen, Tony Finau is going out, I think, 14-1, but, you know, he's second in birdies gained in the field, first in stroke gains, tee to green, as you talked about, how gained on approach, he's fifth. These are all great metrics for him. Driving the ball extremely well. Had a great tournament at the Memorial, even though he didn't win, he played well. Let's hope we're happy on Sunday and get a win for Tony, right?
Yeah. I'm all in. I would put my money on Tony this week. He's been playing steady.
Really? Because I thought you liked Fleetwood.
Listen, I like Fleetwood. He hasn't been out there. I think he'll finish well.
You like
well.
His hair. That's all you like about
him. So, I think he's going to finish well. He hasn't played. So, I mean, he's got to get his toes wet. So
in regard to the matchups, and this is my best, like, this is my best bet on the table right now. Tony Finau beating Fleetwood -125.
Okay.
So Finau finishing better than Fleetwood -125. I think that's the best bet on the table right now. John, you're making
fancy. I hate to use the four-letter lock word, but that I think that's a lock.
Thank you.
Yeah.
-125? Are you kidding me? Are you pooping me? Come on. I'm all over it.
Tommy, first week back on tour. You might not be used to the whole situation. No fans.
Yeah.
It's gonna be weird. And Tony's just firing all cylinders, so.
So again, in order, if you're interested in fading some players, it's +275, not +250. For Brooks Koepka to not make the cut, and for DJ to not make the cut, +300. So guys, a few things really quick before we end the podcast. First and foremost, there's a lot of talk right now in regard to fans attending events, specifically the majors. You've got the PGA Championship. We know that's a no. But there's some talk and speculation that in November, fans, maybe a small percentage, will be able to attend the Masters. Guys, do you think that the tour just needs to say no fans at all for the remainder of the season?
Not in Georgia, they're not going to have fans. I don't see that happening at all. I think they just need to say, listen, we're going to play it. We're no fans right now. If they want to call an audible towards the later part of the year, maybe. But right now, I think they just set the expectations with players and fans. You will not be attending a PGA Tour event this year.
Let's take the Masters as our subject for fans.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got all the practice rounds, the par three tournament, all the four tournament rounds. It's pretty much the entire week of Masters golf. The place is packed, number one. Number two, a lot of the times it's different people. So, like, you don't buy a Masters package for the week. You're like, hey, we're going to go to the practice round on Tuesday. All right, we're going to practice round on Wednesday. So not only is it 50,000, 60,000 people a day, it's different people every day.
From all over.
They're all over
the place. From all over the country.
And they're from everywhere. Right. And it's in the South and, you know, their rules with Corona may be different at that point. Who knows? I can't see any people going to the Masters or, for that matter, any PGA Tour event until either we get a vaccine or the country is more under control, wherever that tournament may be. But think about how much money Augusta is losing from having spectators there.
They're fine.
Before, you know that. you usually shout out a few shekels for gifts, and I need a shirt and he needs a shirt, and bring me back a hat and bring me back a chair. And the merchandising concession there is unbelievable. And I think that's a big part of it. But I just can't see, they've been pretty quiet about it, but I don't see any way that they're going to allow fans at Augusta.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's happening.
What's it going to be like in November?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you listen to the scientists, there's a chance that, you know, come November and December, you know, across the country will be on an uptick because of the weather. Yeah. But guys, we just have a few minutes left in the podcast. So, Christina, just to get an LPGA tour update, I know that there's the LPGA drive-on that's about to take place. I'd read an article that there's a few South Korean players, and we know how well and competitive they are, that are going to skip it and they don't want to come to the United States because of COVID-19.
Yeah, there's about 8 of the players from South Korea who have decided to skip the first 2 events right now. So, you know, they're taking it cautiously. Now, listen, the LPGA and the PGA are 2 very different organizations, unfortunately, about what the resources that they have and the players that are playing on those tours. The LPGA, as you know, is golf in general is an international sport, but the LPGA has a strong international presence and is supported by sponsorships around the world. So these players have decided, you know, they're going to skip, they're going to see how it goes. So the first 2 tournaments, the first one is next week, as you mentioned, which is going to be at Inverness in Ohio. And they also are doing back 2 weeks of tournaments in Ohio, but like the PGA Tour, the LPGA Drive-On Championship is going to have no sponsors, no spectators. But the following week, the marathon is going to have pro-ams and sponsorships. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays itself out. But all the players are basically going to be in quarantine. So even if, you know, you're playing those 2 weeks, they have a chartered flight. So if you're in this LPGA bubble, you will be getting onto a chartered flight, flying over to Scotland for the Scottish Open and the British Open, and then you are going to be flying back. So they are trying to keep the players as safe as possible in quarantine. There's no private flights, no private jets. Everyone's traveling together. So they're basically locking down all the players. But some of these players, like I said, like you said, for those first 2 tournaments, trying to see how it, you know, works itself out. So it should be interesting. You know, but there are a lot of players who are playing in those events. So I think we're up for, you know, it's going to be different. It's definitely going to be different. So I'm looking forward to it. I know the ladies want to get out there and play. And they've been waiting a long time since January was the last time just some of them teed it up. So they're eager. They're excited. They're nervous. But, you know, I'm excited. We're all excited to watch it on television. We got some LPGA to watch next week. Christina, so I hope everybody tunes in and gives the women some support. And
Christina, you're just breaking up, unfortunately. So we're having, because of the connection, I'm sorry, we're having a hard time kind of filing everything. Guys, I thank you so much tonight to sit down and record this podcast. I appreciate it. I'm glad you guys are safe and healthy. John, thank you again for inviting Christina and her husband, Mark, and I to come play at Alpine Country Club. It was just a magnificent, yes, hot, but a magnificent afternoon on Monday. And the track is just absolutely fantastic. So thank you so much. Everybody, we thank you so much for tuning in to our On the Tee podcast. We record every Tuesday night. It posts on Wednesday. And so we'll be back next week to recap the 3M Open and look forward to more golf as well. So everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. We sincerely appreciate it. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll talk to you next week.